Okay, so we're doing Genesis, the first book of the Bible. Why it's the first book, I'm not sure, because although it is the beginning, which is what Genesis means, it's probably not a good book to start with if you want to start reading the Bible. I would much rather start somewhere else, probably in the New Testament, actually. But it is all about the beginning. It's kind of the foundation. I mean, it's what the Jewish nation looked back to, first of all, as where their roots are. So the first basic questions on Genesis are, who wrote it? Well, we don't really know. There isn't much information. We kind of assume it was probably Moses, and that he probably wrote it some point after the Exodus when they're wandering in the desert. So if I refer to Moses as the author, it's simply because that's the easiest thing to say, because we don't have any other author to really suggest. It is a book which really matches the customs and practices of 1500 to 2000 BC. The culture, migration, sale and purchase of land, customs, farming, all these things reflect that period of time. And it's very much focused on Mesopotamia. And I thought at last minute, actually, I probably need to sort of say where Mesopotamia is, because it's not a term we use nowadays, because it's not a modern country. It's focused particularly on Iraq. And if I use my zapper, you can see Iraq is roughly there. Next to Iran, Mesopotamia is partly in Iran as well, near to Syria. And the route that Abraham took and many of the wanderings would be up towards Turkey and then back down through Syria towards where modern Israel is, because that was a common trade route. Genesis is supremely a book of relationships. It's about the relationship of God and nature, God and man with man. And it's all about one God, one creator, everything else created by him. So, very quickly, we probably mostly know what is in Genesis, but as a very fast overview, creation comes first. We then have the story of Adam and Eve and the fall, story of Cain and Abel, Noah and the flood, the Tower of Babel. That's chapters 1 to 11. And that point, it changes in style, because that first section is very broad brush covering prehistory. Come to chapter 12, and we start meeting Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael, Jacob and Esau, Joseph and his brothers, and we finish with Israel and the family settling in Egypt. So we have no dates for chapters 1 to 11, but we can give Abraham a rough sort of date, which I'll mention later. Now, an interesting thing, as we look a little bit closer, is that Genesis is divided up by the author into 10 sections, which begin with the phrase, the account of. We have the first creation period, then chapter 2, verse 4, we have the account of the heavens and the earth. So it includes in this section the creation of Adam and Eve. In more detail, Eve comes along to join Adam. We have the fall, Cain and Abel. We have a genealogy of Cain. A genealogy is a list of ancestors, a list of generations. And there are lots of these in Genesis. And we have a genealogy of Cain, seven generations, which end with Lamech, who's a bit of a nasty piece of work. And it finishes with the birth of Seth, who is the third named son of Adam and Eve. We then move on to the section which is the account of Adam's line. So this is another genealogy, which it goes from Adam to Noah through Seth's line. So we're following a line of people that God blesses. And one thing to watch for is the similarity of names between the Cain line and the Seth line. And it can get confusing. In particular, I used to get confused about Enoch, because there are two Enochs and an Enosh, and only one of them is the one who walked with God. And of course, that's down Seth's line. It ends with chapter 6, verses 1 to 8, which is a description of basically evil. Mankind has fallen badly. If you want to, you can always follow in your Bible and whip through and see where I'm going, because I'm going to carry on through all these 10 accounts. The third one is the account of Noah. We've got three chapters here, which of course includes the story of the flood. God's covenant with Noah. And interestingly, Noah blesses Shem and Japheth, but curses Ham because of an event that happens towards the end of the story. And interestingly, Ham is the father of a guy called Canaan, which obviously gave his name to the land of Canaan. And then we end with Noah's death. Now, we then have the section of the account of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Another long genealogy. This is why Genesis is not easy to read, because apart from the stories, there's lots of lists of names. In this genealogy, there are lots of names of well-known Old Testament places and people groups. And this is one reason why I think there are so many genealogies in Genesis, because it's really important to people where they came from, their ancestry. And interestingly, in verse 5 of chapter 10, it can only be an editor's note that's in there, because if you look it up, I haven't actually got it in front of me. It's obviously not something that Moses would have written, because it's putting a name to a place. This section ends with the story of the Tower of Babel, when mankind is so proud that they think they can achieve things without God and meet God at his level. And I have a little thing here. When Tim spoke on Psalm 2, he compared the Tower of Babel to this picture, not the one I'm showing you, of a 16th century painting by Peter Bruegel, and saying how it looked like the EU building in Strasbourg. That is nothing like the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel would have been a ziggurat, because at this point in time, they discovered how to make bricks. And that meant that it could build much higher and bigger. So technology was what made them proud. And the picture that I'm showing is a ziggurat, which is much more likely to be what the Tower of Babel looked like. Let's move on our accounts. We have the account of Shem. This is a very short one. Again, a genealogy of 10 generations from Shem to Abram, who later gets called Abraham. The account of Terah comes next. This is a really big one because it's the story of Abraham. It's considered the account of Terah, but of course he's the father of Abraham, and so we go through the whole story of Abraham. That includes the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the birth and early years of Ishmael and Isaac, and goes as far as the search for a wife for Isaac. We then have the account of Abraham's son Ishmael. This is really short, it's just 6 verses. It lists his 12 sons and where they settled. And I think it's interesting that it just says in a little side note there that the sons of Ishmael lived in hostility to all their brothers. And you just wonder about that on the basis that there's this idea that all the Arab nations were descended from Ishmael, as opposed to the Jews being descended from Isaac. We have the account of Abraham's son Isaac next. Now, this is quite long, it's 10 chapters, and this is, again, not so much the story of Isaac, but more about Jacob and Esau. And this is where we have Jacob tricking people and being tricked himself by his father-in-law, about the bickering between his wives, and a lot of description about nomadic life and customs of the time. Number 9 is the account of Esau. This is just one chapter. Another genealogy, and it describes Esau as the father of the Edomites. And that's a tribe and land of people which crops up quite a bit in the Old Testament. Finally, the 10th section is the account of Jacob. So this is the whole story of Jacob's family, and it takes us to the end of the book. And so this includes the story of Joseph and his brothers. The last 5 chapters are all about them being in Egypt, about Jacob, then called Israel, the one who wrestles with God, settling in Egypt with all of his family, all of Israel's family, which I think is considered, I think it, they're named, and I think there's about 70 of them that settle in Egypt. And interestingly, in chapter 49, Jacob blesses his sons and prophesies over each of them. And whether that is actually, we'll say Moses, writing what he knew happened to each line of each of the 12 sons, or whether it really was a prophecy that had been passed down for each of them, we don't know. So this book begins at the beginning of time, of the earth, and it ends with the death of Jacob, with all the family in Egypt, and then it's silent for around 300 years until Moses comes along, and his account begins in Exodus. So it's a bit like the gap between the Old Testament and the New Testament. You have this big gap where there's nothing written, and we have don't hear God talking to the people of Israel as they now are. So we're looking back a long way. We're looking at prehistoric times where there's nothing written down. The first time we can put a date is around when Abraham was born, and roughly 2166 BC. We're in the Bronze Age. That is a long time ago. We can put some dates in to the rest of Genesis, chapters 12 to the end, and we're still only just into sort of 1900 BC. So we're looking at a very long time ago. I thought it was quite interesting that actually the time from Abraham to Jesus is quite similar to the time from Jesus to us now. So we're looking a long, long way. Now, the problem with Genesis, apart from all those genealogies, is there are a lot of things that seem very illogical, things that don't make any sense. Some of the numbers don't seem to add up. We have things like talking snake, which appears to have had legs and then didn't. We have Cain having a wife and building a city when we've only been told about 4 people and one of them has been murdered. We hear about, before we hear the story of Noah, we're told about Tubal-Cain, one of Cain's children, or descendant, that's the word, who forged all kinds of tools out of bronze and iron. The Iron Age didn't start till about 1200 BC, about 1,000 years later. So we have these awkward little questions. And what we have to bear in mind is that we are looking so far back that it really isn't the same as we understand the world they have a completely different understanding of information, stories, passing on of knowledge. We think numbers are fixed things. They are absolutes. In this time, they weren't. When Moses was writing, numbers were more important symbolically. They weren't accurate or rigorous. 7 and 10 were important numbers. You may have picked up quite a few 7s and 10s in the things I've mentioned already. 7s all through Genesis. And then you have 12s and 40s. There are a lot of 40s in the Bible. How many of them exactly mean 40? What is important to the writers in Genesis is that people, key people, events, and the lessons that we learn from them are what are important. I know people do like to add up numbers on the genealogies, on the lists of names, but the thing is that they are never complete. When you look at a list of names, they miss out generations. If you compare in the New Testament, Matthew's genealogy of Jesus and Luke's in chapter 4 of Luke, they're completely different. There are only a few names that coincide. And the reason is that they're choosing people from the ancestry that actually follow what they're trying to say. So Luke is trying to be fairly worldly about it, fairly straightforward. This is who descended from who. Whereas Matthew is much more about spiritual reasons and looking at Old Testament heroes that led to Jesus. So we are crossing time, culture, and language. So we shouldn't expect to understand the way that Moses and the people of Israel understood things. And it struck me that actually one of these ways to kind of get the idea across is if Moses had a mobile phone, how would he describe it to the people of Israel as they understood things? They didn't have glass, aluminium, steel, plastic. The only thing you could describe is probably the case and say inside the skin we have something that hears, sees, speaks. Well, it must have ears, nose, and a mouth then. It knows where it is by reading, or I have to say the stars, and it can see them during the day as well as at night. And when you look at it, you can see things that aren't in front of you. It's meaningless, isn't it? We use a mobile phone. We don't understand its complexity, but we can use it because we understand how it works. And that's much more how writers at the time of Moses saw things. They were interested in the information that made a difference, not about technicalities. It's kind of like looking at a painting of a scene instead of a photograph. It's an impression of what the person feels about it. So I think we shouldn't be too hung up about details of Genesis, because there's so much that we are not going to understand, just as they wouldn't understand us. The stories came through tradition before being written down. They were spoken, passed on from one person to another. So Moses was writing down history that had been passed verbally and accurately, because when they passed them down verbally, they did keep them very accurate. So Genesis isn't a science book and it's not a history book. It's a theology book about God's relationship to man and man's relationship to man. Genesis succeeds as a history and as a group of stories because it gives an understanding of how everything came to be as it is and God's relationship with man from the beginning. It crosses 3,000 years of human generations, every culture and language on earth, and we can all read it and understand it. it succeeds because of that. It's reliable because it's authentic to the culture and language of the time it seems to have been written. It's supported by archaeology, and other literature of the same period echoes it. When there may be arguments over parts of it, there's advice that would do well to follow. St. Augustine of Hippo wrote regarding Genesis, "In matters that are so obscure and far beyond our vision, which we find in Holy Scripture, passages that can be interpreted in very different ways without prejudice to the faith we have received, in such cases we should not rush headlong and so firmly take our stand on one side that if further progress in the search for truth undermines this position, we too fall with it. Hold Genesis lightly, but see what God is saying through it." I will now hand over to Bernie. I've kind of looked at the what, and Bernie's going to look more at the why.